Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
I think that you're probably the most dangerous thing I've heard on the radio in a long time.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 AM KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And we wish to welcome all of our new listeners from the Paranormal Radio Network, on which Exopolitics Radio is now heard on Mondays at 8 p.m. Central Time. So welcome, Paranormal Radio Network listeners, now heard in 282 U.S. cities and 92 countries. I'm your ever-present but elusive host, Alfred Weber, and our theme this week is on extraterrestrials and the United Nations, which is a perennial theme, if you think about it, in exopolitics, because the United Nations is the closest thing that our planet has to a sort of a world representative, although it is singularly not a world representative in the sense that it's structurally flawed, being born out of the City of London, House of Rothschild, Skull and Bones, Rockefeller, Western powers, you know, structure, and is very much a tool in some sense of and controlled by those powers that have been enforcing the extraterrestrial truth embargo over the past 60 years. Nevertheless, there have been a number of breakthroughs, notably in 1978 with the passage of United Nations General Assembly Decision 33426 at the instance of Sir Eric Gary, who was then Prime Minister of Grenada, which called for the establishment of an agency or department of the United Nations for research into unidentified flying objects, and also urging member states to undertake research programs, quote, into extraterrestrial life. So we have that precedent in the United Nations, and we have, in essence, the structure of a disclosure program already inside United Nations General Assembly Decision 33426 of 1978. The problem is that it's lain dormant for 30 years, and this is the 30th anniversary of the decision. Can you imagine that the United States, under Ronald Reagan, invasion of the island republic of Grenada was carried out in retaliation of Sir Eric Gary's championing of the exopolitics cause at the United Nations and passage of General Assembly Decision 33426, and because reportedly they had the body of an extraterrestrial there at the Grenada Medical School, possibly. So there's a great deal over the years that has been sort of growing behind the scenes, ready now for coming into full fruition at the appropriate time. And you may have heard over the past 3 weeks a great deal about reported meetings, secret meetings that occurred at the UN on February 12th to 14th, and we'll be getting the latest updates on those, whether those are in fact disinformation operations, U.S. Navy and Intel disinformation operations, creating a meme on which the entire exopolitics community and the world public can feed, or whether those meetings were a reality or a combination of both, kind of a smokescreen. But we'll be focusing as well on UN Decision 33426, which is a reality. That resolution was passed in 1978. The United States, through bureaucratic subterfuge, had it transformed into a decision rather than a resolution, so it would be bureaucratically hidden and harder to find. But here we are 30 years later, and it provides the framework and the structure for United Nations extraterrestrial disclosure. And when you think about it, it's the entire planet that really should benefit. The United States, with its 350 million people, is about 5% of the planet's population. And if you look at the last 3 or 4 years of the Bush administration, they have brought probably 95% of the world's harm in terms of the war in Afghanistan, which has now genocided, reportedly, according to a reliable study, 1/4 of the Afghani population. And in Iraq, at which, according to reliable estimates, over 1 million people have been killed. And for what? In a war for domination, for occupation, and for oil, led by, you know, two rancid servants of the city of London, George W. Bush and Richard B. Cheney, two men utterly without principle who are, you know, in the service of the petroleum nuclear establishment, who are utter traitors to the United States, and who led and who committed Article 3 treason on September 11th, 2001, and who have been at the forefront of the extraterrestrial truth embargo, and who have so mismanaged the economy of the dollar that the United States is on the verge of bankruptcy now, and who are engaged in a program of world depopulation led by a low-level nuclear war against the population of the world through the mechanism of bombardment of Afghanistan and Iraq with depleted uranium weapons, precisely what the ethical extraterrestrials who reportedly met with President Dwight Eisenhower at Edwards Air Force Base warned against. And in the many, many highly documented extraterrestrial engagements over nuclear power plants and over nuclear weapons factories and other nuclear missile plants, what nuclear warfare does to the biosphere, interdimensionally, and specifically to the human genome. The 5% of the population of the United States, led by that very narrow cybernetic network within the United States that is in the service of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, that is out to decimate this planet in a program of ecocide, genocide, and omnicide. Well, that has to terminate. So it's very logical that we would seek to move for extraterrestrial disclosure through a world body such as the United Nations, and why 30 years ago, Sir Eric Gary would courageously move, despite all the machinations of the United States, to get United Nations General Assembly 33-426 passed. And that is not a meme. That is not something that is a matter of speculation. That is a real resolution. And please go to www.exopolitics.com and you will see a copy of it. This has been our official Exopolitics Radio commentary. Please stay tuned for our interview with Exopolitics commentator Dr. Michael Sella. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. And today we have our very special guest, Exopolitics commentator, Dr. Michael Sella, who is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the scholarly study of the main actors, institutions, and processes associated with an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or the mass media. Dr. Sella's groundbreaking book, Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence, presents the first scholarly framework for understanding the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Dr. Sella is an internationally recognized scholar in international politics, conflict resolution, and foreign policy, and is the author editor of an additional four books, including The Hero's Journey Toward a Second American Century, Essays on Peace, Why the Cold War Ended, and Islamic Radicalism, Muslim Nations and the West. And he is the director and founder of the Exopolitics Institute. Welcome, Michael.
Aloha, Alfred. I'm happy to be back on the show.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know, today we'd like to cover sort of a perennial topic that is in the news with regard to exopolitics and extraterrestrials, and that's understandably so. That's the topic of the United Nations, the UN, the closest that we have to what would be considered a global representative of the human population. We know that it has many, many structural faults with it, and is by no means a true democratic representative of the world population, but still it's the one that we have. And in the time that we have in this interview, I'd sort of like to cover two aspects of it. One is this controversy in sort of the research area that we've been having in exopolitics over the last several weeks, and that is as to whether there was indeed secret meetings at the UN on the ET UFO issue in the days of February 12th to 14th, 2008. I guess the issue being is that a disinformation meme, or were there actually meetings? And then in the second half of our interview, I'd like to look more at the promise of what the UN has, and specifically go back to a very unusual decision that was adopted by the UN 30 years ago this year, UN General Assembly Decision 33-426, which we've covered before on Exopolitics Radio, but I think not sufficiently with the focus that decision really provides the structure for United Nations extraterrestrial disclosure now. But first, let's go back to what does it appear now? Are the reports of a UN ET UFO meetings, is that a disinformation meme, or were there actual meetings, or is there more to know?
Well, the meetings themselves were first announced in February 12, where two researchers in New York approached me and told me about a source, a confidential source, who works in the military, the U.S. Military in particular, and was appointed to the State Department as a liaison, who disclosed to them a confidential meeting that was happening on February 12th at the United Nations concerning the topic of extraterrestrials and disclosure. And he then went on to give some specific information about the contents of that meeting. And so on the next day, I released an article just putting out that information that had been relayed to me by the Pickering brothers and their source, who has since met with a third researcher by the name of Robert Morningstar, who had a look at his credentials and was able to confirm that he is indeed a serving military officer who is on assignment to the State Department. And so that was helpful in giving independent confirmation that this source, who claimed to be a primary source, who claimed to have attended this UN meeting, was actually there and was able to share information. And because I had known of this source for 18 months previously, and this was the first time he had ever said anything that we could release to the public, I had confidence that this was genuine information. And I'm still confident that the actual meeting that he describes on February 12th occurring at the UN did happen. However, I'm not confident about some of the issues that he says were discussed at the meeting. I do think that these might be obfuscations introduced to more or less lead researchers down the wrong road. So I think what we have here is genuine information that has layered around it some red herrings, obfuscations designed to lead researchers astray or lead them down these unproductive routes of debate, which subsequently show up as being unconfirmable. And what happened was that then another source, another primary source, emerged in France. A week later, we had stories of a French source who had also attended these secret meetings at the UN, but he spoke about meetings on the 13th and 14th of February, and that he personally attended as a primary source. And his credentials were supported by many prominent French researchers, and so we thought we had an important break in the case, because this French source actually revealed himself. Gil Laurent is his name, and he had very impressive credentials, as was thought at the time, according to many French researchers. And so this gave the whole UN meeting a lot of legs. I mean, it just meant that it became a kind of an important story around the world. And then that led to further scrutiny of Gil Laurent's testimony and background. And what was found was that some things that he claimed concerning his professional background did not check out, and so he was then forced to retract some claims of having been associated with two prominent French scientific organizations, and so he then was, in the eyes of many French researchers, discredited. But interestingly, he did not in any way retract his testimony of having attended the meetings and having revealed some of the contents of the meetings, as well as some of the participants in the meetings. So he did not retract any of that, but he did retract some of his professional associations that he had earlier claimed. And so what you had was a kind of murkiness emerging into the whole UFO story, because now the second primary source, Gil Laurent, had revealed himself and made specific claims of what happened at the meeting, which appeared to be very reasonable claims of what may have transpired, especially when compared to the original military source, US military source. But then with the clout over Gil Laurent's credentials, it meant that what you had again was plausible deniability. And so that's led me to conclude that what we have here is some genuine information which has been released, but with some kind of dubious issues surrounding it in the case of source A and dubious credentials in the case of the French source. And so what we have is plausible deniability. And so it's become a very complex issue, and it's led to much controversy.
Right. Now, there are other observers in the ETUFO field, for example, Jacques Vallée, who say that this fits within the classic mold of a meme disinformation operation, that, for example, Gil Laurent would have been an agent releasing a disinformation story in order to discredit extraterrestrial researchers who would have released that story, and that source A would have been a classic military intelligence agent of the, I believe he's a Navy officer, some even say aided and abetted by the recently retired U.S. Admiral Fallon, and that would have been disinformation coming from U.S. naval intelligence also. How do you counter these kind of observations by Jacques Vallée, which have a lot of support? I mean, the secretary to the permanent British representative to the permanent mission that Gil Laurent claimed had been at the meeting has written back and said, oh, there's no truth to this. You know, things like that. That is, none of the main facts of the Gil Laurent account have been confirmed.
Well, this is where I would partly agree and partly disagree with Jacques Vallée.
Uh-huh.
I think there are aspects of a meme working here, and that is the way in which you have names being put out and partial confirmation occurring, and this kind of generates greater interest, and more people come on board, and more names are being kind of bandied about in terms of who attended and what issues were discussed. So some aspects of this UN case does fit that pattern of a meme being created by the intelligence community to discredit UFO researchers. And undoubtedly that's something we need to consider, because I think this field of exopolitics is one that is conducted with the intelligence community being very active in putting out a lot of disinformation. So we researchers have to be very mindful of that and take that into account. At the same time, I would disagree that the core of this story is disinformation. I do not believe that what source A came out and revealed about an initial meeting on February 12, and even what Gil Laurent has come forward to say occurred on February 13 and 14, are total fabrications. I don't believe that, and here's my reasoning for that. Firstly, we've had other sources independently confirm that meetings did happen, although they didn't discuss what was raised by either Laurent or by the Navy source A that the Pickering brothers revealed. These are corroborating independent reports, but of course, but unfortunately, they're anonymous, so can't say more. But I know of two so far who have done this, and are confident that these independent sources are reliable. So they're basically saying that something did happen. My other main reason is that, to me, it just doesn't make sense why two intelligence assets would be kind of would expose themselves in terms of putting out total fabrications where they're discredited. As I mentioned, I've known of Source A, the military source, for 18 months, and Clay and Sean Pickering have known him for 2 years. Now, one can argue that in for two years he cultivated himself and kind of developed a relationship with Sean and Clay Pickering and also with myself to get our trust so that eventually he could come forward and give us some fabricated information that we would run with, based on the history of this relationship where previously he had given us reliable information that had checked out. But that, to me, wouldn't make sense in terms of an intelligence operation.
Could you tell us more about Source A, more in detail who he is and what sort of a person he is?
I have to observe confidentiality about some specific aspects of who he is in terms of his rank and name, but it's clear from what has already been revealed that he is someone who has superiors in the Navy, so his military service is associated with the Navy, and also it's been revealed by Robert Morningstar that he is associated with Admiral Fallon. And, of course, Admiral Fallon is the commander of CENT Command.
Former, because Admiral Fallon is now...
At the end of this month.
Yeah. Oh, at the end of this month.
Yes, right. Yes. He resigned at the end of... He announced his resignation to the end of March.
Currently,
he's the commander of Central Command, which is the command post where any future war with Iran would be conducted, and Fallon made much headline with his opposition to another war against Iran. So anyway, this military liaison that confided to Sean and Clay Pickering, and who I've known for 18 months, is associated with Admiral Fallon in some way. He referred to Admiral Fallon as his mentor. What that means in relationship to the UFO issue, we're not quite certain. Robert Morningstar said that Fallon gave his approval. What you have here is kind of more information that's coming out, which ultimately is going to be very difficult to substantiate, because I doubt very much that Admiral Fallon is going to go on the public record and say that he gave his approval to an authorized leak of information concerning a classified or confidential meeting at the UN. But nevertheless, it's interesting in just getting a little more background of who Source A is. Source A has also worked at some secure facilities, naval facilities, in particular China Lake, and he also has worked at Area 51, so he claims...
Okay, good. I'd just like to jump in here just because our interview is moving very rapidly, and this seems like an ongoing story, and we'd like to get to the second part of our theme, but in a minute or so, how would you summarize where this story is likely to go, do you think?
I believe that this was an authorized leak of information by the U.S. Navy and the French Defense Ministry, who used two sources, two intelligence assets, one a naval officer and the other a French researcher, Gilles Laurent, used these researchers or sources to put out information that they wanted out in the public arena to get the attention of the public, and in particular UFO researchers who they knew would run with this. And I think it was done to kind of get a feel for public feedback, what the reaction of the general public would be to disclosure, because I think that they are trying to get a better understanding on just how well the public will handle disclosure of extraterrestrial life. And I think that this is that what we've seen is just the preliminary aspect of this venture. I think that we will have more authorized leaks, and I believe that they will use these sources or new sources to move this issue forward. So I don't think this is by any means over. I think we're probably in a period now of waiting for new confirmable information to come forward. But I believe it will be offered at a certain point, probably not too far in the future, and this will open the case again up to much public and international scrutiny.
You've been listening to our Exopolitics Radio interview with Dr. Michael Sala. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Let's rejoin our feature interview with Dr. Michael Sala, founder of the Exopolitics Institute. Thank you. Now, let's transition over to United Nations General Assembly Decision 33426 of 1978, which we know is not a meme, but is an actual decision which was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly during its 33rd session. And I wondered if you could just summarize some of the background for us on that, Michael.
Sure. Well, that decision was implemented or was agreed to by the political committee of the United Nations. This was something that resulted from the efforts of Sir Eric Gehry, who was the Prime Minister of Grenada, to get the United Nations to start taking the UFO issue seriously and also the issue concerning extraterrestrial life. So he approved or he submitted a resolution to the General Assembly, and eventually that resolution was accepted as a decision as opposed to a resolution in 1978. Now, the difference is that UN General Assembly resolutions typically are substantive issues that are at the heart of those, whereas UN General Assembly decisions are more concerning just the bureaucratic process in terms of just the way in which the bureaucracy operates, and they're generally non-substantive. And this, I believe, was a result of the U.S. very cleverly trying to mitigate the passage of this resolution that Sir Eric Gehry had lobbied for. But nevertheless, the decision was passed by the General Assembly and is now an official decision of the General Assembly, and it calls for the creation of a special agency of the UN to collect and coordinate scientific research and investigations into extraterrestrial life and UFOs. And so what you have is a decision that mandates the General Assembly to create an agency or department to coordinate international efforts to better understand these issues of extraterrestrial life and UFOs. And that is very important because that gives a lot of legitimacy to the UFO and ET issue and means that there are important policy issues that need to be looked at because the UN is very concerned about these reports and wants to start collating these at an international level. And of course, once these reports are collated and better understood, then we can move to the next step, which is understanding the public policy implications, which takes us into the field of exopolitics.
Right. So from the point of view of acknowledgement and precedent, we can say that in one way, the battle was won in 1978 in that we have a United Nations General Assembly decision, which by its terms acknowledges the existence of unidentified flying objects and of extraterrestrial life, and I'm just reading from paragraph 2, quote, invites interested member states to take appropriate steps to coordinate on a national level scientific research and investigation into extraterrestrial life, including unidentified flying objects, so that that initial threshold question, which is always the most difficult question, that's the disclosure issue, to disclose that threshold. Paradoxically, has already been crossed at the UN and was crossed 30 years ago, technically. And so all that we're looking for is implementation, technically.
That's Correct, Alfred. It is very important to point out that that is a decision that has been already approved, and all we're looking at now is trying to have that implemented, and it's much easier to have a decision implemented than to actually have the decision adopted in the first place. So we are very fortunate that Eric Gehry, back 30 years ago, had the foresight to actually push for this, and I think he paid a very severe price, and I believe that the Grenadian coup that occurred on the very day, which was March 12 of 1979, when he was to meet with Secretary General Kurt Waldheim to discuss further issues associated with this General Assembly decision, that I think that he lost his office. So he paid a very severe price for his very brave action to have this pushed forward. And so we're very fortunate that at this stage, all we need to do is to really push for the implementation of that decision. And it is the 30th anniversary, so it really is important that this year efforts are put into implementing that 1978 decision.
Right. So actually, if we look at from a strategic standpoint, if we look at exopolitics worldwide and where one might apply one's exopolitical resources and energy, it looks like the United Nations is a very high leverage point at which to apply an initiative for disclosure because of the existence of United Nations General Assembly Decision 33426, because of Sir Eric Gehry's initiative back in 1978, which achieved passage. And all of those threshold issues have been resolved. And now it's just a question of implementation. And actually, if we look at what has been occurring in since the year 2000, there has been a steady drumbeat of UN member states, Mexico, Brazil, Peru, Chile. In 2007, we had France, the UK, and others. Japan has now begun to speak about it, which, quote, have begun to take appropriate steps to coordinate on a national level scientific research and investigation into extraterrestrial life, including unidentified flying objects. So that actually the member states have been on an ad hoc basis adhering to and implementing the various terms of this decision 33426.
Yes, that's very important, Alfred, what you've just said, that the countries you mentioned, France, Britain, Brazil, Mexico, that these countries have taken ad hoc measures to start releasing to the general public and to the world community their files concerning UFOs. And that's a very important step forward because it does make it possible now for the implementation of the 1978 decision, because now you have states making their files publicly available so that they can forward these to the UN. And the UN can act as a clearinghouse to basically fulfill the decision of being creating an agency that makes this information available to the world public and helps coordinate international efforts so that the UN can play a role in this. Importantly, the 78 decision also referred to member states briefing the Secretary General about the research, analysis, and investigations into UFOs and extraterrestrial life. So that would mean that there is also this need for the implementation of the 78 decision by having the Secretary General briefed about the data that's available and also giving some analysis and evaluation about what all this means in terms of UFOs and extraterrestrial life. So that is another important requirement of implementing the UN decision 33/426.
Yes, so these are very, very specific steps. And this, as stated, the United Nations General Assembly decision 33-426 is not a matter of conjecture. It is something which actually happened. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge your research and just to read out on the air where exactly it appears. It appears in resolutions and decisions adopted by the General Assembly during its 33rd session, 1978-79, A/3345, (GAOR), 33rd session, supplement number 45. And that's the exact reference in the United Nations annals to United Nations General Assembly decision 33426, which is now being hopefully resurrected on its 30th anniversary. We have just a minute or so left in our segment, and I wondered if you'd just like to say a word or two about Sir Eric Gehry and the contribution that he made.
Well, I heard of Eric Gehry through another researcher, Wesley Bateman, who met Sir Eric after he was deposed as the Prime Minister of Grenada and had met with him and interviewed him about what had happened. And Sir Eric told him the story, the background of why he became so committed to getting the United Nations to take the UFO issue seriously, that in fact Sir Eric, while he was Prime Minister of Grenada, had witnessed a crashed extraterrestrial vehicle and recovered a extraterrestrial biological entity, a 7 to 8 foot tall being in a one piece suit that could stretch roughly that could be stretched to 2 feet, and the suit would return back to its original position. So this was definitely material that was not made by any earthly technology known at the time back in the kind of late 70s. And so Sir Eric was wanting to get the UN to move forward on this because I think he saw some great advantage to all humanity in having information about extraterrestrial life revealed. And I think that because of his determination and his knowledge, his direct knowledge that this was real, that UFOs and extraterrestrial life were real, he moved forward as a very in a very important initiative, and he really, I think, has established the foundation for the rest of humanity at a certain point in its history, accepting what he had done and the wisdom and the visionary aspect of what he had done. So I think he really is one of these very rare individuals that was willing to pay the ultimate price for following his convictions. And so in that sense, I think history will remember Sir Eric in a very favorable way as opposed to the caricatures that unfortunately were disseminated to discredit him. But Sir Eric, I believe, is a very great man, and history will, I think, honor him because of his bold action.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, and thank you for your continuing work in exopolitics and for your continuing contributions to Exopolitics Radio, and we hope to see you here again on a continuing basis as these stories unfold. This is Exopolitics Radio. We've been with Exopolitics commentator Dr. Michael Sala, founder of the Exopolitics Institute. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, as you see, there are the makings of a very fertile and positive process at the international level, at the global level, with regard to extraterrestrial disclosure, which leads to extraterrestrial interface in the exopolitical sense. And I think that that truly would happen at the global level, i.e. at the transnational level, rather than giving any individual nation an advantage over some other nation, which fits in more to the game of nations, which is what the past era was about, my nation over your nation. You know, oh, this is the greatest nation in the world. Well, how about this is the greatest planet of which we're all a member? And let's stop slaughtering each other. And I think that that's one of the essential messages that the extraterrestrials are waiting for us to ascend to, so that we can meet them, that we're truly a universal species by which we recognize that we are a planetary species. And we come out of the permanent war economy, which has been enforced upon us by a multidimensional reality and a long history of, should we say, interplanetary strife focused on this planet, and a ruling elite which has chosen its own wealth and power over the planetary evolution. Thankfully, that era is coming to an end, and it appears as though we are now going to begin to ascend to a new plateau of enlightenment and evolution on this planet. A new generation of leaders is coming to power. The old guard is beginning to fall. All of the old wealth, the old petroleum nuclear civilization, is beginning to fall. It's impossible to get the old wars started again. I know that the CIA and Bush attempted to start a war between Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador a couple of weeks ago. They didn't succeed. The three countries got together and in a one-day peace conference solved it all. So, you know, we are into a new day, and that's the promise of exopolitics, and that's the promise at the international, transnational level, beyond jingoism, beyond national identity, into galactic universal identity. Exopolitics Radio is produced by Finnis Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero, who we would like to acknowledge today for a very beautiful new birthday website for Exopolitics Radio, which we encourage you to visit often and to enjoy our free audio archives at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and internationally, galactically, and universally expansive day, week, and life. Thank you.